Can we proceed? Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. On page 193 and paragraph 10.7, dealing with comments from Michelson's attorneys, and according to them, the clause is unrealistic where it requests electronic communication service providers to preserve certain evidence. According to them, the information may be located in various forms, servers, cloud storage, etc. Our submission is that the clause specifically restricts the ambit of operation to the systems of electronic communication service provider involved, and it's our submission that they will have the necessary expertise to deal with everything that takes place on these systems. And there's also a concern raised about the period for which this must be stored. Our response thereto is that although the clause does not prescribe a period for which this information must be stored, the obligations of the service providers usually expire when this information is handed over to the South African Police Service. We also indicate that in many instances, some of the service providers will store this information for other purposes, amongst others, civil claims and compliance issues or compliance reporting obligations. Paragraph 10.8, concern is raised by Michelson's attorneys regarding the fine that may be imposed, and he imposed that the fine should equate portion of the annual turnover of a service provider. Our submission is that a fine is probably sufficient, and the reason therefore is that public perception for not compliance should be a sufficient deterrent to ensure compliance by the electronic communication service providers. On page 194, MTN raised a concern. Or others say that clause 52 should specifically provide the manner in which the prescribed crimes must be reported, and also that it must be done on a confidential basis. Our submission there too is that regulations will regulate this aspect. All information that is usually reported to the South African Police Services regarding criminal activity forms part of a criminal investigation and is therefore confidential. In any event, clause 37 of the bill prohibits the distribution of any information to somebody else unless it falls within the narrow ambits where such information can be distributed to somebody else. On page 194, paragraph 10.10, Deloitte raised a concern that we should define the word feasible. Our submission is that the word is clear enough, it needs not to be defined, and in the context it means that information must be reported within 72 hours when it's practical, where it's reasonable regarding all the circumstances. paragraph 10.11, Deloitte, according to them, it's not clear when a fine will be imposed for a contravention of this clause, that is the failure to report the offence to the South African Police Service. Our submission and interpretation the clause is that clause 52.3 clearly stipulates that each and every time a service provider fails to report a prescribed crime to the South African Police Service, that service provider will contravene the clause. On page 195, the Minister of Communication, sorry, Minister of Finance, made certain submissions regarding clause 52.5, where certain financial entities is excluded from the reporting obligation. And we agree with the proposed amendment, and we also propose an amendment to sub clause 5 on page 195. On 195, all rise, they mainly provided comment regarding malicious communications, and they indicate that a similar reporting requirement should be imposed, and that that will assist to determine the extent of cyber harassment in South Africa. Our submission is that although the clause does not require that service providers must report harmful communications, there is other venues that can be followed to obtain this statistics regarding harmful communications, amongst others the protection orders that is issued by courts. We can obtain information from service providers who assist with directions to remove harmful communications, and also the obligation that is imposed on the national director to keep statistics regarding cybercrime, which also includes contraventions of clauses 16, 17 and 18 of the bill. On page 196, MTN raised a concern regarding the effect on the general obligations of service providers to ensure privacy and confidentiality of communications. That relates to information that must be kept by service providers in terms of this clause. And they do refer to RICA, and they argue that RICA only in narrowly defined circumstances allows service providers to gain access to certain information. Our submission is that indirect communications cannot be intercepted in terms of this clause or be retained, but we do refer to certain sections of the RICA where, which may be relevant regarding a cyber offence, inter alia where a person reports a cyber offence to a service provider. There is provisions in RICA that provide that certain information may be accessed on permission of a person that's involved in that communication. Further submission is, insofar as it relates to archived communication-related information, this clause is also authorizing provision that may be used for them to retain such information when it comes to their attention. On page 198, I'm going to jump to paragraph 1060. It's again a proposal by IAM Governance that the POPI structure specifically be included in this aspect with the reporting obligations, and I think we already dealt with that, and we said that POPI is a specific application field, and we cannot involve the information regulator outside his empowering clause in terms of section 40 of the POPIA. Paragraph 1017, IAM Governance indicate that the information should not be preserved for a period longer than necessary. This is also one of the general obligations in terms of POPIA regarding the processing of personal information. And our submission is that this will be regulated by POPIA. SAFACT in paragraph 1018 raised the question that what happens if, amongst others, encryption is used when a message is distributed through a computer system. And they say that the service provider will probably be not able to track and store such information. And we respond thereto by indicating that there is no positive obligation that is imposed by this clause on electronic communication service providers to participate in the investigation of cybercrime. However, the only required obligation is to preserve information, and that may include the preservation of encrypted data. Bowline indicate that it should be mandatory for all companies to report cyber breaches. And we do take note thereof, but again, I think the ambit of Clause 51 is merely to cover the electronic communication service providers and financial institutions to the exclusion of other entities that use electronic communication services. And regarding the reporting requirement, it's submitted by us that in most instances, many companies will report cybercrime in any case to the South African Police Services, and that relates to certain requirements regarding insurance that were taken out, and we do not want to extend this to include each and every person, to extend this clause to each and every person that renders an electronic communication service. On page 199, it's paragraph 1020. Concern is raised that the bill should also provide for fines where organizations deals with personal information without a dedicated information security officer. Our submission is that the bill cannot deal with this aspect. This aspect is comprehensively dealt with in the bill PIA. And there is therefore no need to include this in the bill. Bowline in paragraph 1021. Make a remark that management of private and public companies should be held responsible in personal capacity for cyber breaches in their organizations. Our submission is that the Companies Act, Section 76 and 77, do deal with compliance issues by the senior members of companies, and if there is non-compliance with their fiduciary duties, they can, in terms of the Companies Act, be held personally liable for such breaches, and such non-compliances may include the fact that they are not cyber secure. Mr. Chairperson, I've come to the end of my part of the comments. There's also attached to the submission an extra A that included a SAOS, which was already handed in at the committee, as well as the sign-off form by the DPME. On page 20, there is the case of Zuku System Managers, which sets out what must be taken into account for a search warrant in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act. On page 203, I also refer to Polonifis case, which is also a very important case regarding search warrants. And on page 205, I refer to various constitutional cases where search and seizures was considered by the Constitutional Court and where they endorse the current procedures in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act, as well as certain procedures in other legislation. To the extent if it complies with the constitutional principles, must be regarded as constitutional in South Africa. Thank you. And Mr. Chapers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Roberts, I noticed your reply that to the suggestion that the SAOS report wasn't distributed for public comment, that there's no such requirement, and I'm sure you're correct. But is that the only reason it wasn't distributed? Is there some reason why it shouldn't have been distributed for public comment?
No, there's no reason why it wasn't distributed. The point about the CS when it's done is that if it is requested, we must make it available, which we've done.
I'm sorry, are you missing the point? I want to know why it wasn't made available for public comment. We've now got it, this committee, but we have no public comment on it. I want to know if there's a reason why that shouldn't happen.
It's not a requirement that it be made available for public comment.
Yeah. Question remains. I understand that it's not a requirement. You've said so, and I can read English. I want to know if there's some other reason why it should not be distributed for public comment. Is there something that prohibits it being distributed for public comment? Is it desirable to get public comment on it? That's what I want to know.
Honorable Breitenbach, I think we must also be fair. If it's not a requirement that it should be done, and they have not done it because it's not a requirement, why should you make it mandatory for them to do something that is not mandatory?
Mr. Chair, I'm not making it mandatory. I'm asking, is there a reason why it shouldn't be done? Is it desirable to get it done or not? They're the experts, not us. I just want to know. I'm not making anything mandatory.
You know, if it's not a requirement, it means it's discretionary. And then if in their discretion it was not necessary.
You'll forgive me, I'm asking the people from justice.
No, but they went to them as well.
I'm sure they can answer it.
They've
I'm not really interested in your interpretation of it, Mr. Chair, with respect. I want to know if there's a reason why it shouldn't be done.
Sorry, Chair. There's no reason why we didn't consult on the CS, except for the fact that it was not required. There's nothing else apart from it not being a requirement. And you will note that the CS captures what the cost-benefit analysis behind the bill. And in the course of consultation, which was extensive on the bill, we dealt with those issues as well. So there's no other reason why we deliberately didn't consult. There's nothing of that sort.
I think we have a responsibility. If we feel that it should be done, we should say to them it must be done, but we shouldn't, find them guilty for not doing something that they had no obligation to do. Honorable Mpumulani, also we shouldn't set traps for one another. Honorable Mpumulani.
Yes, I hope you read my question, which I asked before the break. You remember it. Secondly, on the reporting of the SAPS, you want me to repeat it, or you got that? Secondly, I just wanted clarification on 10.11. I still want to find out, is it the 50,000 per offense of not reporting? Is that what is being explained here? Or a series of offenses of reporting? Because this thing sometimes, I just want to say where the cutoff in the reporting. How do you quantify and say, okay, this is the offense of not reporting this part and that part and that part? Or are you saying for a period of not reporting of happening at a particular period in terms of minutes? I also want to an explanation on 10.12 on the South African Reserve Bank. What just an explanation? What does that Section 10 of the South African Reserve Bank provide? And you are changing. You seem to be giving an. Because you are saying that this doesn't affect does not apply to financial sector regulator or function best performed by South African Reserve in terms of Section 10 of the South African Reserve Bank or any other legislation. I would be happy if you could just dwell on that at on that one. I think the first question is also tied with question 11.19. When you give that explanation, that it's with 11.19 as well, so that I be. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Regarding the reporting fine that is imposed on service providers for not reporting, that relates to each and every incident of a cyber crime. So they must be identified offence, and if they don't report that to the South African police, they will be fined in relation to that specific non-reporting. So it actually attributes to a service provider for every instance a cyber crime that has been completed is not reported to the South African police and doesn't operate per period. Regarding the South African Reserve Bank, or rather the comments by the Minister of Finance, in terms of Clause 51, there is certain obligations on financial institutions and electronic communication service providers to report cybercrime to the South African Police Service. The problem is that the South African Reserve Bank, as well as other entities that is referred to in his communication, will strictly speaking in terms of current legislation qualify as financial service providers, although they don't actually render a financial service as a bank. And that is the reason why we exclude them from the operation of this clause. Any other legislation phrase that we added to this clause relates, amongst others, to the Financial Sector Regulatory Act that was adapted recently by Parliament in 2017. And it's going to have some consequential amendments regarding your definition of a financial service provider. But in general, it only excludes the financial sector regulators in terms of that Financial Services Regulatory Act, and that is the only reason we're doing that.
The first question, through you, Chair, the first question was, you said it must be the cyber crimes that are specifically requested by SAPS. That's a question I wanted to find out, and I wanted you to tie this with that offense, which is on 10.10, which you attempted to explain. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Jefferson. It was before the break, so I probably forgot that one. I've got a two-minute memory. But in any case, what happens is that there's a lot of cyber offenses that's taking place against a service provider. First, if they need to report on each and every cyber incident that's taking place daily, the police will really be flooded with reports. Like we received 10,000 viruses that were sent through our system, there were 58 hacking attempts and stuff like that. I think We're currently not interested in that. There is another place for reporting, and that is the cyber hub of general cybercrime issues. But in terms of the clause, there's a provision. The South African police may, by regulation, prescribe certain categories of offences that must be reported to the South African Police Service. I think for a start, what we do is we want to capture the most serious offences that is being committed. If that is committed, the Minister of Police must prescribe, amongst others, that fraud amounting to 50,000 rand must be reported to the South African Police Services, or a hacking attempt that damaged critical infrastructure that amounts to 50,000 must be reported to the South African Police Service. That is examples of what must be reported. So we just want to narrow the ambit of what must be reported in terms of this clause.
I have a problem with that. You are saying that. Now I appreciate that you say certain you can't report everything, but I fail to understand. You are making an act that criminalizes certain activities of cybercrime. But we depend on what the police decide they will accept that this may be reported. I get some problems. And in that, then I further want some explanation on 52.2, for 52, clause 52.2. You are saying that the police are going to make a regulation and say fraud relating to a certain amount may not be reported, but fraud relating to a certain amount, say more than 50,000 or something like that, may be reported. Now, I just want some explanation. And how do you bring in the police, and how do they? Thank you.
Mr. Jeppesen, sorry, I probably misunderstood the member. First, the clause we're currently dealing with is obligations on certain persons to report specific offences to the South African Police Services. In general, all offences can be reported to the South African Police Service. If a person commit any offence from clause 2 to 11 of the bill, it can be reported to the police. There's no limitation on what offences can be reported to the South African Police Services. Clause 52 aims to involve service providers to help the South African Police Services. In most instances, the crimes will not be committed against the electronic communication service provider or the bank in question. But obviously it takes place over the system and the client is involved. The client is going to the South African Police Services and he is going to tell the South African Police Services, yes, my banking account had 50,000 rand in it, next morning it was gone. He can go to the police and lay a criminal charge. But then there's also obligation then on the service providers to say to the police, yes, took place on my system. I've got an obligation to report this. I've got a further obligation to keep evidence relating to that offence. So the general reporting of crimes to the South African police is not affected by Clause 52. Clause 52 is merely imposing a reporting obligations on the persons that facilitate most financial transactions, to also make that available to the South African police services, and to help with the investigation of crime due to the fact that they must retain information.
I hope that you do understand, Chairperson, you may explain. I heard you said talking about if everything
Honorable
is being reported. Honorable
we are meeting again tomorrow. Go and digest this as presented, and then have a second bite tomorrow, and allow members to go for lunch, because there's a sitting this afternoon. And let me just thank our presenter for doing the best. This is a very complex bill, interrelated to many others, and you have discharged yourself very, very well, and keep up the good work. Mrs. Pillay, thank you for putting together a good team. We'll see you tomorrow.